Cats and Kittens, we are back with another very special stay-at-home self-quarantine episode of the BrandoCast, the most special BrandoCast in the history of the BrandoCast, because every single choice that I have made in life, good and bad, has led up to this moment. My guest today is literally the only Moon Zappa on the planet Earth.
Wow, what an intro. First of all, you're still doing it as though we're all quarantining. Is there another wave I don't know about that's coming? Do you still not leave your house?
Before the pandemic, I was able to do this live in person with people at an undisclosed studio. But, you know, since the pandemic, I've just been doing it at home because it's so much fucking easier to just text someone and say, hey, I can do this anytime you want, morning, noon, and night. So I guess I'm choosing to stay at home. I don't have to. I've gotten COVID twice, but fuck it. I mean, look, I got you for the next 50 odd minutes. I'm so fucking excited about that because you and I have not talked in quite some time. So who fucking knows where this is going to go today?
Yeah, we've been friends a long, long time.
A long, long time. Although you haven't seen me. My current iteration, I have put on, I would say, at least 30 pounds in the pandemic. So I need to do something about that. So thank God you're seeing me over the computer. That's all I have to say about that.
You're a handsome man, whatever shape, size, whatever additions that you have, that you're working with.
Was. I'll take was. Now, totally mistaken for a homeless person all the time. All right. Before we get going on today's BrandoCast, and by the way, Brian Ferry of Roxy Music is going to be our topic of discussion. Would you please just give me, in those fabulous glasses of yours, please just give me a Cliff Notes version of what is going on in your life right now? Because before I jumped on our little chat today, I saw a Moon Unit tea post on social media.
Yeah, so I have a little tea company called Moon Unit Tea, and you can buy the teas at teagraphy.com, teagraphy.com. And that's something that I did during this sheltering at home world. I started a little tea company, which has always been a passion of mine to take breaks with tea. It's a very comforting thing to me. So yeah, I have a little line of teas. That's one thing that I'm doing. I also am working on my memoir, and that I'm in year two of that process. And I wish that somebody would have just told me to go to Al-Anon instead, because it's basically like doing unrecovered step work when you write a memoir.
Well, as someone who has done a step four, it's step four, the fearless and moral inventory.
It's one extended step four where you just take a look at, I started the book just as basically a diary entry and love letter to myself to say, well, I believe you. Well, I saw this, and well, this happened, and this sucked, and so on. And then as I started writing about my mortal enemies, I realized that that I just had my own version of events, and that if you go macro on your experiences, other people are having other experiences you may or may not be aware of, and it's not my job to diagnose anyone, though I love doing it with friends. How fun! It's not really useful to really understanding the human condition. So I followed a gut instinct, and it is leading me to a place I couldn't have imagined, where my heart is more broken and more open than ever before.
Okay, so may I ask if there is a chapter entitled Mortal Enemies?
I mean, the book could be called Me and My Mortal Enemies, or it could be called You're Doing It Wrong, or it could be called unsolicited advice from somebody who really has no business offering any. There's so many in parentheses sub potential chapters and titles, but my goal is to be free and to help others become free and to surpass our versions of ourselves and what we imagine is possible. I mean, to really open up our imaginations and see the choices we do have.
Shame never liberated a single spirit. That is from page 86 in the blue book, How Al-Anon Works. Oh, and also I will say this, one of my favorite things, not to talk about program, we're anonymous and those kind of things, but I don't care if anyone knows that I do Secret Club. One of my favorite things that I've ever learned from that program is I am not responsible for what other people think of me. Now, if I punch someone in the face, if I stab someone, if I steal money from someone, yeah, I'm very much responsible for their anger. But if someone thinks I'm a hobo, if someone thinks I'm selfish or a jerk or whatever, and I'm not, that's on them. So there's freedom. I have found tremendous freedom in that. I am not for everyone. Do you know what I mean?
I sure do. And somebody very close to me shared recently that my feelings come from my fear, and my fear comes from my past. Mm. So that is really, that's a bit of an eye-opener right there. I try to stay in my creativity as much as possible. And then when I'm not doing that, so like, I wish I could write to music. When I'm drawing or painting or cooking or dancing around, then I can have music playing. But Brian Ferry is one of the most soothing things a person could do for themselves, just to put some Brian Ferry on and listen to that voice and then just feel his groin. Just let it just circulate through your system.
Okay. Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we really supercharge this conversation by jumping right in to the history of Mr. Brian Ferry? Born on September 26, 1945, Brian Ferry is an English singer and songwriter, and of course, he's the leader of the legendary Roxy Music. His voice has been described as an elegant, seductive croon. With a keen eye for fashion, Brian Ferry has also been recognized for his distinctive image and sartorial style. According to the UK's Independent, Ferry and his contemporary David Bowie influenced a generation of Brits with both their music and their appearances. British broadcaster Peter York once described Ferry as an art object who should hang in the Tate. Brian Ferry. Moon Zappa, tell me more about what Brian Ferry means to you.
So Roxy Music, there's so many aspects of Brian Ferry. I love when an artist grows and you get to grow with them. I mean, I came to this so late. I came to solo years where it was that music that was like music to make out to time, and I just thought that was just supposed to be background music for the hookup. But as I was lucky enough to work briefly for VH1, and at a time when so I worked at MTV as an on-air personality, and originally Dweezil was hired, and then I was his guardian. I was 18 and he was 16, and Gail couldn't, our mother couldn't parent the two younger siblings and also be on set with Dweezil. So I was sent, and so they had to take me. But I guess they liked me too. So when they had the spin-off channel, VH1, which was supposed to be like the more adult version, once you start paying bills, And you vote and pay taxes, then now it's time for VH1. And so And I got lucky enough to host a show within a show called, I think it was like Darcy's Music or something. It was supposed to be like their version of the alternative scene, like their version of 120 minutes or something. And so then Brian Ferry came into the studio, and that's when I really was like, oh my God, I literally met this tall, iconic, just, I don't even, I mean, I had a spiritual awakening just being in his presence. And my father was, he had passed away by then. So I hadn't been in another room with another true icon in a minute. And so it was just that reminder of like, oh, when somebody is a fully embodied version of themselves, every single thing that they do or say has a certain weight to it. And here's this gigantic, you hear the music and then you have to be in person with that thing standing a few inches away from it. I was like, yes, please.
Did you feel some feelings in 3D when you were standing there with Mr. Brian Ferry?
I feel like what I felt was that same thing when you read a really good poem and you're like, oh, right. Or somebody gives you a piece of advice you forgot that you already knew. But then you also have this sense of, oh, wait, more is possible than I previously remembered. Because when you get in your ruts, you're just doing your regular thing. Like, I mean, on the most basic level, if you're like, oh, I just drink smoothies every morning for breakfast. And then one day somebody's like, what about some amaranth? And you're like, amaranth? What the hell's amaranth? Wait, there's other things I could have? And so he was the human version, I guess, of amaranth. And then I was addicted. I don't know. There's some people you just like them on sight, or they just wake something up in you. And he's not afraid of a lower chakra, everybody. You can just feel that his sexuality's online, his creativity's online, his intelligence is online, his aesthetic is online. There was all this, he just was just juicy from head to foot.
Please explain for my audience, which I think
is your audience.
I think my audience is a lot of dudes just like me, a lot of friends. I think there's a lot of Iron Maiden fans. Mm-hmm. I think I have a lot of people who listen to Rock Tales, the silly show that I do with your sibling Amit Zappa. I think people who just love rock. But you said something about chakras and Brian Ferry. You said he is someone who appreciates a lower chakra. Could you please explain or extrapolate on that further?
So I hear music in this way, almost like a visual way. Like if a person is standing upright, I can hear where the notes are coming from. If you like mark it, like you're marking notes on like when you check your height on a door, and every year when you're little, you kept growing and you would mark it on a door. So music hits me in that way. So a lot of times, like David Byrne of the Talking Heads, that is a neck up experience. That is a mental experience. Fish is a neck up experience. Pantera, belly button down. Metal is belly button down.
Yeah.
And African music is belly button down. Like it is so good. And a lot of the 90s stuff is just the neck. And we've talked before, if you hear people that sing, that I call it tiptoe singing, they smile sing. That's like it's a nightmare. So and some artists are a head to toe. Artist. And not only head to toe, they have some sky and they have some molten magma in there as well. Mm-hmm. And Brian Ferry, you go into the earth's core and straight out your shishim nanati, everybody.
Shishim nanati?
Shishamnanadi. That's the crown chakra.
I have missed you. I have missed you so much. I have missed you so much. Holy shit. That is incredible.
You astrally travel listening to this motherfucker.
Yeah. Well, that is a
and
fact.
And you're present on Earth. You're both. What?
Yeah. Well, you know, hey, by the way, that's the whole goal of Secret Club is to like learn how to be present all the time, which is frightening for most people, which is why some people run to booze and other people run to other distractions to distract oneself from the present moment. But I think that's what people loved about Roxy Music, too, because it was super heady, but it had a groove to it.
Yeah. And then you just feel expanded, too. I mean, I do.
What do you remember what else you were listening to around that period of time? That's such an interesting period of your life, because I'm going to ask you a question as if I don't know you.
Okay.
You know, you mentioned that this was a time when your experience with Brian Ferry happens to you after your father passes away, which I know a little bit about. What else was helping you music-wise to get through that sort of period of your life?
Well, I have to go back a little bit further to another Brian Ferry entry point, which was actually the drummer from Faith No More. He was the first person who put a Roxy Music song on a mixtape for me. And so that was actually the original, my original gateway experience into the Roxy Music and Brian Ferry realm. And that was, I then connected with that person. So that person, whether it was in my life or not, then I had that association with that person. And then I felt like I was, you know, connecting to him. So when you come to a piece of music or an artist and it connects you back to yourself, that is such a fun added layer to experiencing something. Sometimes music is of a time, maybe an artist saves your life. Maybe an album does. So I've had a couple of albums that have really done that for me. I mean, when I was much younger, probably Tori Amos. I mean, I was like, shit, this, Kate Bush, Bjork, Fiona Apple. These are women who are like, oh, they get me. Sinead O'Connor. I mean, for the longest time, the idea of when Sinead O'Connor's album was called, she had an album called Universal Mother. And I was like, yeah, that's what I am. I'm a giant surrogate tit for the rest of the family planet that didn't get a good mother. So I was like, I'll be that tit. And then I fired myself from that job.
That's a tough job.
It's the worst.
Yeah, it is the worst because that's half the planet.
It's
more than half that planet did not have good mothering.
Exactly.
Were you there when young Rick Zappa hit on Kate Bush?
What? No.
You were not there when young Rick Zappa hit on Kate Bush? He claims he did.
I wasn't. I wasn't invited to that event. That was at someone's home, I think, in the UK. And I wasn't there. But if I had been there, I probably also would have tried it.
Born to a working-class family in Durham, which is a county in the north of England, Brian Ferry studied fine art at Newcastle University before moving to London in the late 60s to pursue a career in music. In 1970, he began to assemble the rock band Roxy Music with a group of friends and acquaintances. This group included bassist Andy McKay and, of course, Brian Eno. Ferry immediately took the role of the band's lead singer and main songwriter. Roxy Music achieved immediate international success with the release of their eponymous debut album in 1972, an album that contained a rich multitude of sounds which reflected Ferry's interest in exploring different genres of music. Roxy's second album, For Your Pleasure, further cultivated the band's unique sound and visual image, which would establish Ferry as a leading cultural icon over the course of the next decade. And I have to say, in putting together this show for today, basically I'm just culling notes from Wikipedia. I wrote some stuff down, but a lot of it is just Wikipedia so that we can, you know, share with the kids listening at home, whoever the fuck you people are, information about Brian Ferry and Roxy Music.
The other thing that's so cool about Brian Ferry, and more specifically Roxy Music, is if your Spotify playlist turns to shit and you need some reset music that resets the algorithm, Roxy Music and The Clash are go-tos for helping the robots remember that you are not just trying to listen to ambient space sounds stuff from, you have to have these ways of getting back to yourself. Otherwise, you'll end up with, too many Doobie Brothers in your mix or something. I don't know. I recommend Roxy Music just for an algorithm reset. And then also the fact that his music kind of reinforced my love of standards. When an artist covers something, it's almost like if you don't have a relationship with that artist and you hear their covers of things, you can really appreciate who they are in another way. And you can really see, wow, to take somebody else's material and elevate it, then it just, there's something about that that's really cool too. And then you can go down a rabbit hole with, well, who originally did it? Oh, how many versions of that song are there? How many other artists? So that's another wonderful thing about, I really love about Brian Ferry.
Well, you actually brought me to the next little blurb that I wrote down. Ferry began a parallel solo career in 1973 by releasing These Foolish Things, an album covering standard songs, which was a drastic departure from his ongoing work with Roxy. His sophomore album, Another Time, Another Place, featured Brian Ferry posing by a pool in a white tuxedo for the cover. Over the next few years, Roxy Music would release a trilogy of albums, Stranded, Country Life, and Siren, which broadened the band's international appeal and saw Ferry take greater interest in the role of a live performer, reinventing himself on stage with elaborate costumes ranging from a gaucho to various military uniforms. However, Brian Ferry disbanded Roxy Music following the release of their best-selling album, Avalon, in 1982 to concentrate on his solo career. I was turned on to Roxy Music because they're so British, and they didn't play Roxy Music on regular 70s radio in America. You had to be a weird kid to know that stuff, and because I grew up in Pittsburgh, it was probably against the law to listen to Roxy Music. Michael Penn turned me on to Roxy Music because he loved the sort of the art rock of and the inventive style of them. But this was something that I learned sort of in my research of Brian Ferry. I didn't know that album of standards existed, which now I just feel dumb. Should I go get it? Is that what needs to happen as soon as we're done talking?
Yeah, it's fun to listen to other eras of music reimagined and to hear how some of those melodies are just, I don't know, they're just, again, going back to soothing or lyrical or timeless. I think that those are qualities I look for. But sometimes I really like something that's just strictly contemporary or of a time. But yeah, I think he's able to do all those things. The other thing too is, and I think this, I appreciate this the older I get, is when you see people elegantly age and that they become more themselves over time, and that we live in such an ageist culture that it's nice to see people role modeling elegance, sexuality, wisdom, artistry over a whole lifetime, that you don't just have to burn out. I mean, I don't know. I'm just thinking about, we're so fascinated with these telescopes that are looking at dead stars and dead galaxies. And yet we're just like, oh, wait, you're over 20. Bye. That doesn't make any sense.
So. I wish that we lived in Logan's runtime because my crystal started blinking 20 years ago. I'm so happy with the fact that you actually saw me at my peak, which was probably 1999, maybe 2000. Then I've been a dead star since then. But on a lighter note, I will tell you this. Speaking of mixtapes and Spotify playlists, that is how I like to relax, making Spotify playlists. So my favorite one, I'm going to have to ask young Moon Zappa to go way, way, way fucking back and deep in her head, deep into Laurel Canyon, because I have a 24-hour playlist of 93 KHJ music.
Circa
68, 69, 70. So that's just Sonny and Cher, Temptations, with the jingles, the radio of Los Angeles, the station, the monkeys. And that blisses me out. Just putting that on in the background and listening to that specific music that was the AM station in LA makes me endlessly happy. I also have a playlist of over 600 songs of what I would call vintage new wave, starting from early 70s Bowie up until Nirvana, basically, and everything in between. And that's
that was one of the things we super bonded over. I would call you and I'd be like, do you remember who sang Cry? Godly and Cream. Who sang what? We'd like go through the more obscure stuff and try to, whatever. We just had that shorthand and that fun. That was really fun. And then I'm sure you've talked about your banking system, right?
you mean funneling cash in album covers instead of having a bank account?
Yeah. Have you talked about that on the show before? That's one of my favorite. I can't see an album sleeve without going, is there any cash in that thing? What was your banking system? Like, where did you... Was one like your travel fund, and when was it? Or was that just like your version of keeping stuff in a mattress? What was that?
No. You met me at a time, not long after you and your brother did an episode of Roseanne, when I was really putting my life back together after being emotionally shattered by the death of the first big adult relationship, and I mean I was barely functioning to the point where I kept my cash, however I fucking made it, and I have no idea how I did. In album covers. Yeah. And
but what was the system? Do you remember?
No, the Blues Brothers was the system, because that was the album cover that I kept most of my cash in. And then and then albums that nobody would listen to, like there was a Gene Loves Jezebel that I used. because the system was albums that nobody would pick out of the pile. That's where the cash was.
That was the safest place, is albums nobody would listen to. You're right.
Oh, because this is like 1995, and I had an account at that goddamn Security Pacific on Sunset near the old All-American Burger, like by Fairfax, and like I overdrawn, and they sent me letters, and I just ignored it. Because that was all I was capable of doing back then, was ignoring problems, which eventually came to bite me in the ass. But in the mid-90s, I'm doing the best I could with the limited tools that I had, like a little tiny toolbox.
I found it eccentric and glamorous in a way, and just so inventive. And I just
God bless you, because you were a lifeline. You were like literally one of the lifelines during that period of time. You were like one of the few people, aside from the old school group of friends, who was like, I see you. You're talented, but you're squandering that talent. What is fucking wrong with you? You're so fucking powerful. You're not using your talent.
I know. I'm like, what's up, wizard? What are you going to do with this? I mean, I'm still pushing you to write that book and write any book. That was the other thing too. We also bonded over amazing books. Nick Hornby was a favorite. And
yeah, he wrote my book, High Fidelity. That's my book. he grabbed it out of the ether before I did. And that's the whole fucking thing. You have to get it. It's all up there. Everything, right? It's all up in the cosmos. And the whole thing is like, can you access it before some other asshole?
But it's not even before some other asshole. It's your iteration of it is going to be different than somebody else's. It doesn't matter if it's been grabbed, because if you read it and you're like, yes, and then you go, oh, but you know what they missed? This thing that I also know about. So,
and that's where my limited tools get in the way. Because I remember you took me to see Greg Barrett for the first time, and I was still performing live back then. But you took me to see Greg Barrett at a little space in Culver City, and I was like, oh, that guy's doing a better version of me. So I have to quit what I'm doing now. As a child, I was a child trying to live in Los Angeles by keeping his cash in album covers.
Greg Behrendt, have you had him on the show?
I have had Greg Behrendt on the show, of course.
He's so great. Yeah, he's so wonderful. I mean, the thing too, one of the things that I always think about that Greg always said was his one of his bits was people always say it's impossible to, that you're a sellout if you write a pop song. And then his bit was, have you ever tried to write a pop song? Have you ever tried to write a hit pop song? It's really hard to do. So if you can do it and then quote, quote, sell out, good luck with that. I mean, it's real ignorance to say that somebody's a sellout because how do they even know the formula that's going to make every single person turn into a zombie? I don't understand it. It's a crazy magic trick. Do you remember the other funny thing that we did back in the day when we were working on music together? Do you remember how that happened?
You mean with producer Jack and Dino in your living room?
Do you remember why that happened that way?
Well, what I remember for people listening at home, Moon wanted to put together an album of her own, and she hired Jack and Dino, who was at that time was a very big producer from Seattle, right? He had worked with Nirvana.
He did Bleach.
He did a whole, and did you fly him down to LA?
I did. What happened was at a certain point, I think it was right around the Brian Ferry time. I was like, you know what? I think I'm a musician too. I'm a buried artist. I think I'd done, you know, the artist way and discovered through my morning pages and hanging out with all the musicians. Like the whole thing was like, if you're hanging out with these other types of people, maybe you're one of those types of people you're hanging out with. So I was around a lot of musicians and writers and comics. And so I thought I really want to do an album. And so I made a little cassette of songs and I sent them to three producers. One, because I assessed what I viewed were my strengths and weaknesses. And I thought, oh, these are three producers that would fix what is wrong with me. Mm. And one of them was from Jellyfish, who worked with Fiona Apple. I'm spacing on his name. John Bryan. So I sent a tape to him. I sent a tape to Brian Ferry's friend, Brian Eno. And I sent a tape to Jack and Dino. And I thought, okay, these are the people that are my people. Only Jack responded. And Jack sent an 8-page scathing assessment of why I should never go into music. It was like, you're setting yourself up like you're Aretha Franklin. You are not Aretha Franklin. It went on and on about how I'm visual. I'm not auditory. It went on and on. And I thought, he really has a handle on what is wrong with me. So and he's the only one that's responded. So I called him. I was like, well, it sounds like you know what to work with, what to fix. Can you fly down to LA? And he said, he was shocked that I still was like, yeah, come and help. And then I called you and I was like, hey, do you want to be in this band?
Someone who could barely play guitar. I mean, I'd held a guitar a few times, but I owned one. Because my friends were like, you should learn how to play guitar. You love music so much. Learn how to do it. But cut to us in your living room.
Yeah.
And you, do you have a tape of that anywhere?
I'm sure I do somewhere.
Jesus Christ.
I know. It's just so damn funny.
Brian Ferry's 6th solo album, Boys and Girls, reached number 1 in the UK in June of 1985. It was his first and only solo studio album to top that chart. Boys and Girls remained in the UK charts for 44 weeks, and its lead single, Slave to Love, reached the UK's top 10. Bette Noir, great album, was released in November of 1987 by Virgin in the United Kingdom and reprised in the States. It was a commercial and critical success, peaking at number 9 in the UK. The first single, The Right Stuff, was a collaboration with The Smiths' Johnny Marr, and that was the album's only top 40 entry in the UK, peaking at number 37. Including his work with Roxy Music, Brian Ferry has sold over 30 million albums worldwide. And of course, Roxy Music and Brian Ferry were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2019. 19. They are also playing at the Forum on September 28th. Are we going to see Roxy Music at the Forum?
Yeah, we should.
There are tons of tickets available. Right. Do you remember we were actually paid money. You set the job up to work on a very early website. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes.
Doritos, Moon and I, and Laura Milligan.
Milligan.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. That's so crazy. You got the job for us to create a fake. It was the Doritos website. Was a fake
this is
band.
This is when companies were first thinking about content, additional content to reach consumers in another area. And so we inexplicably got hired to as though there was a fake band that loved Doritos. And so I was like, well, I'm not doing this job alone. I'm going to get my two favorite funniest people I know to also be in this alternate universe with me. And what else did you want to say about that?
I'm just saying that I had absolutely no idea what the internet really was and where it could possibly go. And my inability to see, as David Bowie called it, an alien life form that had taken over the planet. I just remember thinking, like, who's going to go on their computer and click on the Doritos website to look at a band? Was the name, what was the goddamn name of the band that we invented?
I can't remember. I'm sure I've got the file someplace, but I just remember you were Izzy. They were a character named Izzy. And yeah, there were six characters, a manager, and then all the five band members. And we got to just basically write diary entries as those characters. And the idea was that somebody would read these humorous pieces and then identify with that sort of, archetype, and then enjoy a Dorito even more. Because then I think like the manager liked the ranch style, and then the lead guitarist liked the spicy one, and it was supposed to just be like, wait, there's another flavor I can enjoy too, and I think in my heart of hearts I thought I cannot sell things I don't believe in, and so that was like my briefest encounter with, could I work in advertising? And I was like, nope.
I don't even, did you get a box of free Doritos out of it?
If they had given me the free Doritos, I wouldn't have taken it. Now, if I worked for a farm box, I would be like, yes, please. I'd love some of your organically grown wild arugula. Thank you.
Which didn't really exist back then.
No.
The whole farm box, the drop off at your apartment, order from Blue Farm or whatever the fuck, or Blue Apron, didn't exist.
None
like
of that.
That's what I that's actually what I'm struggling with now, because you've known me for so long. I am struggling with the fact that all the things that I used to rely on are gone. And everything that everybody else relies on currently, I'm still befuddled by. And it makes me feel old. Do you understand what I'm saying?
What's an example of something that they want that you don't want, and that you had all the time that doesn't happen anymore?
Calling people on the phone. Remember how we used to like talk to each other on the phone?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Making plans that aren't canceled at the last minute. What else? What else?
Are you saying that you still want to make phone calls and make plans that people don't cancel?
Kind of. I mean, I just remember that culturally. I also miss.
But do you have people you can do that with still? Because maybe it's not the issue. Maybe it's not the thing. It's who you're trying to do it with.
Well, but it's also always me too. Sometimes I'm just too lazy to do it. But also shared.
Want people to call you, make a plan with you. So an outside person to call you, make a plan, and then keep the plan.
This is a plea for help for those of you listening.
Am I hearing the request?
Yeah, yes.
Done.
And the request is going to the people who listen to this podcast. I just want to be called, and I just want you to make a plan with me. That's all that I'm asking people.
Yeah, that's easy. I can do that.
Shared cultural experiences too. Now there's a million.
That sucks. That's missing. That's
right?
That sucks.
That's missing.
The group experience. Yeah.
The group experience, because it's so there's a kajillion things. I miss the days when we all watched the same shows, listened to the same music. Liner notes. Yeah.
Do you know that they started selling records, vinyl again in airports? But I did not know that. Yeah, but it's the classics. It's like you're not gonna find Gene Loves Jezebel at JetBlue. I don't think yet.
Have you been to the new Amoeba Records on Hollywood Boulevard?
No. Do you love it so much?
It's pretty not bad. They were able to like capture the spirit of the old Amoeba Records. Keeping it light, bright, and polite with Moon Zappa here. They're able to keep it. It's evocative of the old place. And it's super nerdy and big. Do you also realize that it's been 40 years since Valley Girl came out?
I do realize that. And I'm trying to think, like, my perfect way to honor it would be to get Paul Thomas Anderson to do a video. Because we never did a video for Valley Girl. And I thought, how would I do it now? You have to, you know, an icon should be met with an icon. And so I thought, Paul Thomas Anderson, people tell me I look just like his wife. I thought maybe she and I could be adult Vals driving around in the valley. He knows the valley. I mean, wouldn't that be a fantasy?
Can I make some pitches?
Yeah.
You guys, you and Maya Rudolph, own a fancy wine store on Ventura in Sherman Oaks.
Yeah.
Right? Just Sherman Oak Wines. That's what the Valley Moms are doing.
The point ultimately is the way to honor something that is so iconic is to stay in the icon lane. And another way I can see it being honored would be to have Penny Lane, documentary filmmaker Penny Lane, conceptualize a way to see that time and that experience. She's a wonderful filmmaker. These are my fantasies. This is what I would do if I had a fancy Rolodex.
Agree or disagree, Valley Girl is the best movie about the Valley.
I think it's the only movie about the Valley. No?
Fast Times?
Oh, see, I'm a Fast Times person.
Okay, you're a Fast Times person.
If you put me in a camp of Fast Times, and in the same way that, I mean, sadly, I was, I won't say sadly, but you know how like the band member from Duran Duran that you liked the best, you kind of went on a trajectory. Like if you liked John
Taylor,
then you ended up with Pearl Jam, not Nirvana. Like if you, you went that path. And so I don't know why I'm bringing that up except to say that the Fast Times, I feel like Fast Times, if you started with John, maybe you end up with Fast Times.
Totally understood. I think that is a very, very solid, very solid theory. If you're a fan of Nick, that's going to take you more to really more indie movies, more cool esoteric things. If you like Simon, it's going to be a little bit sexier. John's the coolest Duran Duran-y.
Well, hindsight. But I love a tall man. I do love a tall man.
And he's tall. I'm going two nights at the Hollywood Bowl, September 9th and September 11th. All right, final question as we fuck around here, because we've almost come to the end of our little journey here today. What are you listening to now? What's inspiring you right now, current day?
Yeah, so I just discovered a new artist, which I think Spotify made me a playlist and had a song on there. And they're like, Moon, we think you're going to like this. And they were not wrong. And it is a song by an artist named Frazee, what's her last name? Ford? Is that her name? Yeah, Frazee Ford, a song called Done. The way I'm listening to music right now is I'm just listening. I find my anthem of the day, week, month, and that's just on repeat. I just loop on it and I just extract every single thing out of it that I can. And then I go, you know, I choose something else on their list. But yeah, Frazee Ford is new to me. I think she's from a band called the Be Good Tanyas, and I know nothing about them. I'll probably dive into that next. I love her voice. I love the remix of Florence and the Machine, My Love with the Glass Animals remix. That's on repeat 1,000 times. I'm listening to, I always go to Bon Iver because my nature is just gloomy, essentially gloomy. And I also love, I'll get the lead out. I will get the lead out on a regular basis. If I'm going to attempt to exercise, I will jog to A Whole Lot of Love. It's my running song. And that's, yeah.
I have a vintage metal playlist on Spotify as well. I will send you the link. I think you'll love my vintage new wave list because there's all that obscure stuff is on there. Moon Zappa.
I mean, I could talk to you for hours, but we'll just
Why don't we say this? Why don't we will?
I'm going to invite you. I'm going to invite you out and I'm going to keep the plan and we can talk about it then.
We're going to go to Baroni's. I think we should go to Baroni's.
I love that idea.
I honestly think we should go to Baroni's.
I'm saying yes. I said okay. Yes. I think the people heard me say yes. I hope they
have you know what? This is just round one. That's all I'm going to say about Great. That. And thank you so much for spending your precious time with your old friend today.
Happy to be here.
Awesome. And to the rest of you, thank you so much for liking, listening, subscribing. Great guest coming down the pike, but you know, fuck it. We had Moon Zappa today and she should have been guest one, but we fucking got her. How fucking amazing is that? And of course, the BrandoCast is produced by Mr. Richard Scheltinga. So until the next time, cats and kittens.
I like buy the neatest mini skirts and stuff. It's like so bitchin' because like everybody's like super, super nice. It's like so bitchin'.